genre under the microscope.
I think it's time that the international community and the UN itself understand that UNRWA's mission has to end.
Chinese hacking allegations.
Every critical infrastructure entity needs to double down on resilience. Businesses need to prepare for and expect an attack.
And persuading Hungary to unblock billions of dollars.
Ukraine needs more ammunition. There is a big imbalance on the fire capacity from one side and the other. And this gap has to be filled. And this is why this council.
Today is Thursday, February 1st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman. The United Nations continues to grapple with the fallout from allegations by Israel that members of the UN organization that provides aid to Gaza participated in the October 7th Hamas attacks on Israel. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres on Wednesday described the UN Palestinian Refugee Agency, UNRWA, UNRWA, as essential and appealed to all countries to guarantee the continuity of UNRWA's life-saving work.
The United Nations immediately acted following the very serious allegations against UNRWA staff members. I was personally horrified by those accusations, and yesterday I met with donors to listen to their concerns and to outline the steps we are taking to address them. I underscored the importance of keeping UNRWA's vital work going to meet the dire needs of civilians in Gaza and to ensure its continuity of services to Palestine refugees in the occupied West Bank, Jordan, Lebanon, and Syria. UNRWA is the backbone of all humanitarian response in Gaza. I appeal to all member states to guarantee the continuity of UNRWA's life-saving work.
The United States is the biggest donor to the UN Relief and Works Agency for Palestine refugees and has temporarily paused its funding, along with several other countries. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said on Wednesday, the agency must be shut down.
I think it's time that the international community and the UN itself understand that UNRWA's mission has to end. UNRWA is self-perpetuating. It is self-perpetuating also in its desire to keep alive the Palestinian refugee issue. And we need to get other UN agencies and other aid agencies replacing UNRWA if we're going to solve the problem of Gaza as we intend to do.
The head of the World Health Organization, Tedros Ghebreyesus, said such a thing is virtually impossible.
Decisions by various countries to pause funds for UNRWA, the largest supplier of humanitarian aid in this crisis, will have catastrophic consequences for the people of Gaza.
Mike Ryan, head of WHO's Health Emergencies Program, said he deplored how constrained UN aid agencies were in helping Gazans meet their most basic needs.
You only have to look into the faces of the people and the cameras and the TVs every night and to see how the nutritional status of people in Gaza has gone down and down and down. They are desperate. We talk about desperate people taking food off trucks. What would you do in that situation? Your family is starving. You're starving. This is a population that is starving to death. This is a population that is being pushed to the brink. And they are not parties to this conflict. And that is at the core of this.
Guterres also returned to his call for implementation of the two-state solution in resolving the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
Excellencies, the conflict must end with tangible progress towards a two-state solution, an end to the occupation, and the establishment of a fully independent, viable, and sovereign Palestinian state, of which Gaza is an integral part. Only the two-state solution, based on the 1967 lines, with Israel and Palestine living side by side, with Jerusalem as the capital of both states, in line with UN resolutions, international law, and prior agreements, can ensure the realization of the inalienable rights of the Palestinian people, as well as a just and lasting peace and stability in the region. The international community must not waver in its commitment. let us work together to advance a meaningful peace process that will put an end to the tragic cycles of fear, hatred and violence and build a peaceful and hopeful future for Palestinians and Israelis.
Israel carried out airstrikes in northern and southern Gaza on Wednesday. Hamas leader Ismail Haniya is expected to travel to Cairo to discuss the latest ceasefire proposal that would include both a halt in fighting in Gaza and the release of hostages held by Hamas. Hamas is a U.S.-designated terrorist group. The United States imposed sanctions on three entities and one individual based in Turkey and Lebanon on Wednesday for giving critical financial support to a financial network used by Iran's Quds Force and Lebanon's Hezbollah. VOA's Joe Ramsey has the details on the U.S. Treasury Department action.
The U.S. Treasury Department said in a statement these entities have generated hundreds of millions of dollars worth of revenue from selling Iranian commodities, including to the Syrian government. As a result of the sanctions, all property of those targeted in the United States or that fall under the control of U.S. persons is blocked. U.S. regulations generally bar U.S. persons from dealing with property of designated or otherwise blocked persons. Further, non-U.S. financial institutions and others that engage in certain dealings with those sanctions may expose themselves to sanctions or be subject to an enforcement action. Joe Ramsey, VOA News, Washington.
On Wednesday, the United States attributed the drone attack that killed three U.S. service members in Jordan to the Islamic Resistance in Iraq, an umbrella group of Iran-backed militias. On Tuesday, U.S. President Joe Biden said he had decided how to respond to that drone attack by the presumed Tehran-aligned militants that killed the Americans on Saturday, but gave no further details about his plan. On Wednesday, Matthew Miller, State Department spokesman, gave a similar answer.
We don't believe it's in anyone's interest to see the conflict escalate. It's not in the United States' interest. We don't believe it's in the interest of any country in the region, and that includes Iran. At the same time, we will defend our personnel, and we will defend our interests. And we made that clear for a number of months, and you've seen us respond and take action, take military action at times to respond to attacks on U.S. troops and to respond to attacks on commercial shipping. And we will continue to hold accountable those who attack our forces. But we will do so in a way that is appropriate, while at the same time making clear we do not want to see this conflict escalate in any way, shape, or form.
Iran's Revolutionary Guard Chief Hossein Salami weighed in Wednesday, saying Iran will respond to any threat from the United States. He's saying, quote, the common chapter between you and us, he's talking about Iran and the United States, is that we know each other. He goes on to say, you know that we do not leave any threats unanswered, and while we are not looking for a war, we are not afraid of war, and do not run away from it. Late Wednesday, the United States struck 10 unmanned drones in western Yemen that were preparing to launch, according to media reports, quoting a U.S. official and a senior defense official in Bahrain. South African Foreign Minister Naledi Pandor said Wednesday that Israel is ignoring the ruling against it last week by the United Nations top court by continuing to kill civilians in Gaza. She said all states have an obligation to stop funding and facilitating Israel's military actions in Gaza.
The finding, we think, also makes it clear that it is plausible that genocide is taking place against the Palestinian people in Gaza. You would have heard the court's president actually saying this.
She also asked why an arrest warrant for Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu has not been issued. Netanyahu said on Wednesday,
South Africa had the temerity to bring us to the ICJ, charging us with genocide against, really in the service of a genocidal organization. Now, the worst thing that I can say is this, that many of the charges, false and unfounded, that were leveled against us in The Hague, were brought by UNRWA officials. And we have discovered in the last few weeks, that UNRWA officials were complicit in the massacre.
In its ruling, the UN court ordered Israel to take action to prevent acts of genocide in the Gaza Strip, but stopped short of calling for an immediate ceasefire. We're following these other stories from around the world. French motorists honked as they drove past tractors blocking highways on the way to Paris to show their support for the farmers' protest on Wednesday. The French government also sent armored vehicles to protect a wholesale food market in Paris in a sign of escalating tensions as farmers also blocked highways in France, Belgium, and the protests spread elsewhere in Europe. U.S. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell, in a sweeping endorsement of the U.S. economy's strength, said on Wednesday that interest rates had peaked and would move lower in coming months, with inflation continuing to fall and an expected sustained job and economic growth. Bone fragments unearthed in a cave in central Germany show that our species ventured into Europe's cold, higher latitudes more than 45,000 years ago. That's much earlier than previously known, in a finding that rewrites the early history of Homo sapiens on a continent still, at that time, inhabited by Neanderthals. Homo sapiens arose in Africa more than 300,000 years ago. Hackers linked to the Chinese government are targeting critical U.S. infrastructure, preparing to cause real-world harm to Americans, FBI Director Chris Wray told this to a congressional committee on Wednesday.
They're not focused just on political and military targets. We can see from where they position themselves across civilian infrastructure that low blows aren't just a possibility in the event of a conflict. Low blows against civilians are part of China's plan.
He said water treatment plants, the electric grid, oil and natural gas pipelines, transportation hubs, among the targets of state-sponsored hacking operations. Jen Easterly, director of the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, said the United States has found and eradicated Chinese cyber intrusions in aviation, water, energy, and transportation infrastructure.
Every critical infrastructure entity needs to double down on resilience. Businesses need to prepare for and expect an attack, and test and prepare for and exercise their critical systems so that they can continue to operate through a disruption and recover rapidly to provide services to the American people. Finally, every technology manufacturer must build, test, and deploy technology that is secure by design.
The Biden administration has been touting its outreach to China, pointing to talks on counter-narcotics, artificial intelligence, and the resumption of bilateral military-to-military contacts as evidence of cooperation that has reduced tensions between the two. Still, concerns remain, including the U.S. fears that Chinese hacking operations could disrupt the November presidential election and Beijing's claims that Washington is weaponizing semiconductor export control. Here's White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wadakasara with this story.
China has previously rejected U.S. hacking allegations as baseless. Ray's warning comes as other officials tout U.S. outreach to China, pointing to new cooperation on counter-narcotics as evidence of reduced tensions. The two sides have also started discussion on artificial intelligence and resumed contact between their militaries.
We agreed that President Biden and President Xi should speak, and should speak by telephone relatively soon. I think the acknowledgement coming out of Woodside that there really is no substitute for leader-to-leader conversation.
A key issue is the U.S. presidential election in November, where Washington is wary of even the appearance of interference from adversaries.
The Chinese are likely to be pretty cautious about interfering, especially with the presidential election. I think we might see some Chinese interference through bots and through online activities with regard to some of the congressional elections, especially if they perceive some members of Congress as being too hawkish on China.
Whether President Xi Jinping promised President Joe Biden in their last meeting in November that China would not meddle in U.S. elections is something National Security Counsel John Kirby declined to confirm.
We've been clear publicly and we've been clear privately with interlocutors all around the world that we'll do what we have to do to make sure that our elections are free and fair, and they have been and they will continue to be.
Potential for new irritants aside, after a turbulent period last year that included China flying balloons to spy on the U.S., the relationship has largely stabilized.
There's been very active moves by the Biden administration, by the U.S. government, to try and find points of calm where China can engage. And on the point on the part of China, it does seem that there is a willingness which perhaps wasn't there even a year or two ago.
Calm the administration is keen to preserve with a war in the Middle East that could expand. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News at the White House.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman. February 1st will mark 3 years since Myanmar's military toppled the country's democratically elected government, setting off a bloody civil war that continues to tear apart the country of 54 million people. Myanmar's ruling junta Wednesday extended by 6 months a state of emergency that was about to expire. The move comes ahead of the 3-year anniversary of the coup that toppled the democratically elected government of Aung San Suu Kyi. The United States on Wednesday slapped further sanctions on Myanmar, marking the 3-year anniversary of the coup as Washington targeted two entities and several people it said were closely associated with the junta. A coalition of more than 40 civil society groups has petitioned Nigerian President Bola Tinubu, calling on him to address chronic insecurity that has only gotten worse since he assumed office last May. The petition follows a series of kidnappings in the capital, Abuja, and southwestern part of the country as well. Timothy Obizu reports from Abuja.
According to a report this week by the Civil Society Coalition, at least 2,400 people have been killed and close to 1,900 others kidnapped since May last year when President Bola Tinubu assumed office. The coalition said it was deeply concerned about the deteriorating security across Nigeria and called on authorities to take, quote, actionable steps, end quote, to fix the problem. Awal Rafsanjani, executive director of the Civil Society Legislative Advocacy Center, spoke on behalf of the coalition.
Our country is under siege. Our country has been taken over by criminals.
The report comes amid a wave of violent attacks in the country, including Abuja. There, armed gangs have carried out brazen kidnap for ransom attacks in recent weeks. In southwestern Ekiti State, armed men kidnapped 6 school students and 3 teachers on Monday. Security analyst Chidio Major says government failure is the reason for the persistent problem. Last year, Tinubu vowed to fix Nigeria's security problems if elected president. After taking office, Tinubu retired several service chiefs and appointed new ones. Critics say that isn't enough. On Tuesday, members of the National Assembly summoned the service chiefs to discuss the state of security in the country. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
European Union leaders will try to persuade Hungary to unblock billions of dollars of EU aid for Ukraine at a crucial summit in Brussels Thursday, as Kyiv warns it is running low on ammunition to fight Russia's invasion. As Henry Ridgewell reports from London, Hungary is likely to demand hefty concessions in return.
At the height of its offensive last year, Ukraine fired up to 7,000 artillery rounds a day, according to European Union estimates. Russian forces fired back up to 20,000 shells daily. As EU heads of state prepare for a Brussels summit Thursday, the bloc's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, called for more military support. But the EU must first overcome internal splits. At the last Council summit in December, Hungary vetoed a four-year, $54 billion aid package for Ukraine, arguing the money should not come from the bloc's budget. Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orbán has long been a thorn in the side of EU unity on Russia and has good relations with its president Vladimir Putin. Liana Fix, Fellow for Europe at the Council on Foreign Relations.
Hungary has refused to join sanctions at the beginning. Hungary has refused to send weapons to Ukraine. Hungary has refused to make Ukraine, to give Ukraine a candidate status for EU membership until it got the return that it wanted.
That return included releasing $11 billion of EU funds to Hungary that had been frozen over concerns about democratic backsliding in the country. The EU is still withholding a further $24 billion, and Orbán will likely demand that some of it is released. Again, analyst Liana Fix.
That is a game that Viktor Orbán knows very well how to play, but it's also a game that both the EU and NATO has adapted by now. So I would be very surprised if this is not a stumbling block, which will be resolved, but it will be resolved with concessions towards Hungary.
Brussels has threatened to sabotage Hungary's economy unless it drops its veto of the Ukraine aid, according to a report in the London Financial Times. Budapest has accused the EU of blackmail. Meanwhile, European leaders are also set to discuss an EU naval mission to the Red Sea to protect commercial shipping from attacks by Houthi rebels in Yemen. Agriculture will also be on the agenda amid growing protests by farmers. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On January 23rd, the Iranian regime hanged 23-year-old Mohammad Golbadlu. He is the ninth known Iranian protester arrested in connection with the massive anti-regime demonstrations of 2022 to be executed. Tens of thousands of protesters took to the streets for months after the death in police custody of 22-year-old Mahsa Amini, who had been detained for failing to wear her hijab properly. Peaceful protesters were met with brutal force. 500 people were killed by security forces during the demonstrations. Thousands were arrested, and an unknown number remain in prison. Golbadlu, who allegedly struggled with mental illness, was accused of killing a police officer after a trial that UN experts, Amnesty International, and other rights groups claim was grossly unfair. He received a sentence of death. His attorney said that the sentence had been stayed by Iran's Supreme Court, yet the attorney was informed of the decision to execute Golbadlu just hours before his client was killed. At a press briefing, State Department Principal Deputy Spokesperson Vedant Patel condemned the Iranian regime's use of the death penalty to punish people for what we believe to be just exercising their human rights. He noted there have been widespread reports of torture, forced confessions, and restrictions on legal counsel. All of this, we believe, undermine any shred of credibility in the decisions handed down by Iranian courts. Since the Iranian regime's violent suppression of nationwide protests following Mahsa Amini's death, the United States has imposed more than a dozen rounds of sanctions in response, targeting Iranian officials, including members of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the law enforcement forces, the head of Iran's prisons organization, other individuals and media outlets involved in censorship. The U.S. Principal Deputy Spokesperson Patel declared will continue to take actions to support support the people of Iran in practical ways, both seen and unseen, in close coordination with our allies and partners in the region as well. I will just note that when it comes to holding the Iranian regime accountable for its malign activities, including its repression of its own people, we will not hesitate to take action.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.